This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Zambia's parliament has imposed a 90-day state of emergency after the president last week declared the need for one. The state of emergency may not only deepen the political crisis in the country, but analysts say it could also scare away much-needed investors to the copper-dependent, landlocked nation.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up.
Also, the United States wants UN sanctions imposed on the DRC if long-delayed presidential elections are not held this year. And according to a UN report, South Sudanese government forces have launched an offensive against a rebel stronghold, and that the situation is extremely worrying.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Zimbabwe police today fired tear gas and water cannons to disperse hundreds of opposition protesters calling for electoral reforms before next year's polls. Sebastian Mofu witnessed protesters being arrested and assaulted. He reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe's capital city came to a standstill for about 4 hours Wednesday as opposition protesters conducted running battles with police. Police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the demonstrators who were lobbing stones and even pieces of fruit they grabbed from street vendors. VOA saw police kick or beat at least 20 protesters with batons before arresting them. Police said the protest had not been sanctioned as required by law. One demonstrator held a placard addressed to the Electoral Commission chairperson, Rita Makarau. The sign said, quote, "Makarau, we demand a fair election 2018, unquote. Police descended on the protester holding the sign, Ralph Zenga, and forced him into their vehicle. VOA spoke to him before his arrest. He says he's protesting because, quote, "We are tired of Mugabe. He must step down from the throne. Do you hear me? He has too many years there. So many people are struggling because of Mugabe. I'm telling you the truth," unquote. The opposition says as many as 100 people were arrested and 25 more were injured. VOA could not independently verify that count with police. The opposition called for the protest after the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission said it would not allow citizens living outside the Southern African nation or those without proof of residence to take part in elections expected between July and August of next year. On Wednesday, Makarau maintained that her organization, also known as ZEG, was not to blame for the decision.
"Our intention as ZEG is to register as many eligible voters as possible. Actually, it is our target to register all eligible voters in Zimbabwe for 2018. It's not ZEG, it's actually the task of political parties that actually have representation in parliament. Usually throw this back to them and say, you are the lawmakers, go and make the appropriate law that we will then implement. Ours is simply to implement the law after it has been made."
In the past, the opposition in Zimbabwe has accused the country's Electoral Commission of favoring the ruling ZANU-PF party. Earlier this year, it took to the streets calling for the commission to be disbanded. President Robert Mugabe, who says he will stand for re-election next year at the age of 94, has scoffed at the claims that the Electoral Commission favors him. Mugabe is currently in Singapore for medical reasons. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Zambia's parliament has imposed a 90-day state of emergency after the president last week declared the need for one. The state of emergency may not only deepen the political crisis in the country, but analysts say it could also scare away much-needed investors to the copper-dependent landlocked nation. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The new declaration of a threatened state of emergency, approved this week by Zambia's parliament, gives increased powers to the president and security forces. The president called for the state of emergency after a fire destroyed the capital's main market earlier this month. He described the fire as an arson attack by a few unpatriotic citizens and said in a speech to the nation that that and other fires were premeditated acts, which, if left unchecked, could have serious socioeconomic consequences capable of drawing the country backwards. Parliament unanimously passed the measure Tuesday. No opposition lawmakers voted because 48 of them were suspended last month for boycotting a speech by President Edgar Lungu. Their leader, Hakainde Hichilema, has been in jail since April, facing a treason charge. The few opposition members who remained Tuesday boycotted the vote. Opposition spokesman Charles Kakoma says his United Party for National Development would have voted against the measure, which he says limits citizens' essential freedoms. Additionally, he says he fears it will scare away visitors.
People, obviously, investors and even tourists will be scared to come to a country that has just declared a certain state of emergency. They are not sure about their investments and about their safety once they are in Zambia.
Falling copper prices and an energy crisis had already sent Zambia's economic growth downward. That was 2015, well before the disputed 2016 poll that pitted Lungu against Hichilema and led to today's bitter political landscape. Martin Davis, managing director of emerging markets in Africa at private accounting firm Deloitte, says local business owners expressed heightened concern to him during his recent visit to Zambia. But he notes Zambia has never quite lived up to its promise.
The country has this perennial word, which is used for many countries in the region, potential. The potential doesn't quite trickle down, doesn't quite result into real strong, robust growth and real trickle-down economics, i.e. creating a competitive private sector. And I think, you know, this is something which a small economy, small, arguably vulnerable economy like Zambia, landlocked as it is, you know, dependent on a single commodity source, so you have to be stable. You can't have these sort of swings in policy and fiery political rhetoric that just undermines the confidence of capital, both domestic and foreign, in your economy.
Analyst Nicole Beardsworth of the Johannesburg-based Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation notes that Parliament enacted Article 31 of the Constitution, the milder declaration relating to threatened emergency, instead of Article 30, a declaration of public emergency. But she says the effect is the same, and Lungu's soft-pedaling of the situation could be making things worse.
He's trying to play a very dangerous game, which is he is imposing legislation that curbs or has the potential to curb the freedoms of Zambians, but he is trying to sell it as not being a state of emergency and not legislation that will curb the freedom of Zambians. I don't think that anyone really believes him in the statements that he made where he said, you know, Zambia is a democracy and people's rights and freedoms will be respected, because to be quite honest, his behavior over the last 18 months has proven that to not be the case.
A spokesman for Zambia's president told VOA last week that the emergency measure is not intended to curb liberties, but to keep Zambians safe. Lungu now has 3 months to apply his new powers to solve the case of the fire that gutted the country's busiest market and destroyed the livelihoods of some 1,900 traders. Officials have estimated it will take 1 year and cost $20 million to rebuild. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United States says UN sanctions should be imposed on the DRC if long-delayed presidential elections are not held this year. It's also calling on the UN Security Council to punish those responsible for recent violence. AFP quotes U.S. Deputy Ambassador Michelle Sisson as saying, "Election delays cannot continue." She says the international community must step up and apply more pressure, not only on President Kabila, but the Independent National Electoral Commission. Last year, the Security Council approved a deal for Kabila to remain in power beyond his term limit and then step down after elections this year. However, there are no plans to hold the vote. The Security Council also heard about increasing violence between government forces and local militia in the Kasai region. There are reports of summary executions and rapes. About 1.3 million people have been displaced in Kasai.
The UN reports South Sudanese government forces have launched an offensive against a rebel stronghold. AFP quotes head of mission David Shearer as saying there's heavy fighting around the town of Pagak in Upper Nile and that the situation is extremely worrying. He says so far 5,000 people have been displaced and crossed the border into Ethiopia. The UN official has called for an end to the fighting, saying there's no military solution to the crisis in South Sudan. Meanwhile, Sudan will have to wait at least another 3 months to learn whether the U.S. will permanently lift some sanctions. The U.S. has postponed its decision while it further monitors progress in Sudan, including anti-terrorist efforts.
Senegal's former president Abdoulaye Wade is making a comeback. The 91-year-old politician returned to Senegal this week for the second time since his 2012 defeat and will be on the campaign trail for the next 2 weeks, traveling around the country to boost his party's chances in the legislative elections at the end of this month. For VOA, Sophia Christensen has the story from Dakar.
Abdoulaye Wade is back. Thousands gathered at Dakar's international airport to welcome the former leader. Gorgui is great, chanted the crowds as Wade made his way through the city. Gorgui is a term of endearment, meaning old man in the Wolof language. One supporter, Cher Baimbourg, says, "You know, today is a work day, but everyone is here and more people will come." Wade's caravan weaved its way to the headquarters of Wade's Senegal Democratic Party, or PDS. Wade was a popular opposition figure in Senegal when he won the presidency in 2000. However, he lost his controversial bid for a third term in 2012. Wade conceded defeat to President Macky Sall and retired to France. At the PDS headquarters, Wade addressed the cheering crowds in Wolof. He remains head of the party. I heard Senegal is suffering, he said, and this hurts me. If no one solves this, I will take care of it. My party and other parties have formed a force that will make Macky Sall leave, he added. The PDS is hoping for a comeback with the July 30 parliamentary elections. There are 165 seats to be filled in Senegal's National Assembly. Political parties and coalitions put forward lists of candidates for the regional and national levels. Voters cast their ballots by party, not for individual candidates. Wade tops the list for the main opposition coalition. The former president's supporters, however, do not expect him to actually take a seat in parliament. Binetou Fofana is a member of the Mouvement Karim President, which is advocating for Wade's son, Karim, to become Senegal's next leader in 2019. She says Abdoulaye Wade has only returned to campaign for his party, and she does not believe he will sit at the National Assembly, even if his Watu Senegal coalition wins enough seats. Karim Wade received a presidential pardon last year after serving half of a 3-year jail sentence on a corruption conviction. He remains abroad, where he has lived since his release. Political analyst Ali Ndiaye says strengthening the PDS is a way for the elder Wade to pave the way for his son. Ndiaye says the results of these parliamentary elections will be a measure of the current president's popularity. He says if the ruling coalition does not get a majority, the opposition will conclude that the president can be defeated in 2019. Ndiaye says the key battlegrounds for the legislatives are Dakar, its suburbs, and the religious city of Touba, which are among the first places Abdoulaye Wade is visiting. This year, 47 political parties and coalitions have put forward lists of candidates for the National Assembly. This includes the Manco Taxanu Senegal Coalition, whose list is headed by Dakar Mayor Khalifa Sall, jailed in March for embezzlement. The number of lists is unprecedented, but the ruling coalition faces two main rivals, Khalifa Sall's coalition and that of former President Wade. The presidential coalition, led by the current Prime Minister Mohamed Boun Abdallah Dion, has not made any official comment on Wade's return. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
Chinese troops are heading for Djibouti, China's first overseas naval base. A statement says the base will be used for naval escorts in Africa and Southwest Asia, as well as humanitarian and peacekeeping. It will also allow China to evacuate its nationals in Africa during emergencies. Construction on the Djibouti naval base began in early 2016. AFP reports Djibouti also hosts troops from France and Japan.
Italy is getting very little support in its bid to have other EU countries take in migrants rescued on the Mediterranean. The head of Frontex, the EU's border control agency, says Italy is under extraordinary pressure, but he says he did not hear a willingness from other member states to help. He describes it as a complex issue, above all for political reasons. Yesterday, at an EU meeting in Warsaw, Italy requested that rescue ships dock in other countries. About 85% of the migrants rescued this year have gone to Italy. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Zambia's parliament has imposed a 90-day state of emergency. The United States wants UN sanctions imposed on the DRC if long-delayed presidential elections are not held this year. And according to a UN report, South Sudanese government forces have launched an offensive against a rebel stronghold and that the situation is extremely worrying. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In the Gambia, environmental activists are protesting the nation's increasing unattended garbage waste products scattered around the commercial town of Serekunda and its surrounding settlements. Serekunda's main market is polluted with piles of garbage left by local stall owners. Protesters blame the Canafing Municipal Council for the poor sanitation. Some collected the garbage at the market and dumped it at the mayor's office. Reporter Pandaria Mbai has more on the story.
Lack of sanitation is becoming a major health concern in the Gambia. For decades, the country has been unable to manage its waste. Piles of garbage are scattered around markets, homes, and in the streets. Residents say the uncollected waste is polluting the environment, including their communities. Recently, some residents of Serekunda, about 15 kilometers from the capital city Banjul, decided to clean up the market. But what started as a voluntary cleaning exercise later became a violent one. Volunteers loaded trucks filled with garbage and dumped it at the mayor's office in protest of the poor sanitation. Police moved in and arrested some of the protesters, who were later released. A similar protest occurred in Bakote. Bakote is situated outside Serekunda. It is about 18 kilometers from Banjul. Residents stormed a waste disposal site in the middle of the town and prevented workers from dumping trash. Rohingyai is the spokesperson for the Bakote Neighborhood Environmental Group. She explained the reason for the protest to Choice Africa TV, a home-based online television channel.
As a community, we feel that our rights and our demands are not being reached, and we have not reached to any possible solution together with the government responsible.
There are two major waste dumping sites in the Gambia. One is next to the country's main prison in Banjul and a tuberculosis clinic. Each time the waste is burned, the smoke pollutes the area. The other waste disposal site is situated in Bakote. Residents there also complain about smoke-related pollution coming from the dumping site. Njai says the Bakote community had tried in the recent past to engage the government to solve the problem.
We went through the right protocol, we went through the right ministries, we wrote to KMC, we wrote to all the ministries that are involved, But what called to this situation to reach to an extent was there was no dialogue.
Njai says the backwater waste dumping site exposes the community to pollution and related health problems such as breathing difficulties and skin diseases. So Njai says they decided to resist any form of waste dumping at the site.
This is our community. These are our permanent homes. We are the people affected. You needed to go through the right protocol as we have done. As a community, we also have the right to demand for people to come to the right people they need to channel before they take their authority on this.
Yankuba Koli is the mayor of the Kanifing Municipal Council. He tells VOA that the council has stopped using the backwater dumping site due to concerns expressed by the community. Koli says all collected waste materials are now transported to Banjul for disposal. Koli accuses some of the environmentalists of littering by dumping waste into his office premises after cleaning the vicinity of the Serekunda market. The environmentalists said the best way to satisfy their outrage against the mayor and his staff was to dump the collected waste into his office premises. Mamudu Sware is the executive director for Gambia's National Environment Agency. He told iAfrica TV the government is working vigorously to address the issue of waste recycling in the country. He warns that the current environmental situation in Serekunda could cause a cholera outbreak and help spread malaria. He says the government has reached an agreement with a waste recycling company to resolve the nation's growing garbage challenges. Meanwhile, the Member of Parliament for Serekunda, Halifa Salah, has appealed for calm and talked with the authorities to resolve the matter. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
South African jazz musician Ray Phiri has died. Phiri, who was 70, has been battling cancer. He became well known around the world in the mid-1980s when he joined American musician Paul Simon's Graceland tour. Phiri was a composer, singer, and guitarist, and was known for jazz fusion that combined traditional South African music with other styles. Some of his albums include Look, Listen and Decide, and Fire, Passion and Ecstasy. South African President Jacob Zuma called him a musical giant. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll review the 29th African Union Summit that was dominated by discussions on war and conflict, but also talks on investing in the African youth. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.